Welcome to episode 366 of the Entertainment 2.0 podcast, brought to you by thedigitalmediazone.com. I'm your host and producer, Josh Pollard.
And I'm your host, Richard Gunther, and this is the show where we talk about Microsoft Entertainment technology, including audio, video, gaming, and more across all Windows platforms.
Well, Richard, tonight has proven why the show is more a delayed release podcast and not primarily focused on our live show because, boy, has it been a train wreck trying to get this live show going. So thank you to those who stuck around or came and left and came back. And yeah, it's been it's been an interesting night. In addition to you traveling, so hopefully your hotel bandwidth holds up and hopefully my throat holds up as I suffer from allergies or whatever the crap is going on.
All right. So for someone who just spent the last day or two in sprint planning, I think we just identified three or four risks there for this show right now.
Time to turn off that part of your brain, Richard. It's time to focus on the tech.
Okay.
It's not time to focus on listener feedback because we don't have any. So you guys need to fix that problem for next week. And you can do that by shooting us a message at entertainment20@thedigitalmediazone.com. Or if that email address is just too long to remember, go to the website, use the contact form. Either way, we'll get it. So since there's no feedback, we will dive straight into the news, starting with HBO Now, finally, on the Xbox. I think it's on some other services too, but who cares? It's on the Xbox now, both Xboxes. The Xbox One and the 360, this service, which, gosh, what was this, last summer that this debuted on Apple platforms only?
Well, let's be clear about this, right? It just happened last time to debut the day that Game of Thrones started.
Oh, that's right.
So when did it become available this year on Xbox?
Like 4 days before Game of Thrones started, I think.
Right before Game of Thrones started.
Yep. So I don't have this service. I think you probably don't either because you just have HBO on your cable subscription, right?
Correct.
So you probably didn't get a chance to try this either. But if you would like to try this out, you can do so. It's $14.99 a month. It does not require a cable subscription. That's the big difference between HBO Now and HBO Go. HBO Go is an add-on for people who are already getting HBO through their paid TV provider. This is for people who aren't. And it gives you access to, you know, most of their previous catalog. You can go back and watch previous seasons of Game of Thrones. You can watch the new episodes as they're airing. You can even go back and watch things as old as The Wire with HBO Now. And now you can do it on a 360 and on an Xbox One. And I gotta imagine it's working pretty well because I didn't see a bunch of people complaining about it on Twitter or on Reddit.
Yeah, no, that's a really good point, is that the news on this was very quiet. So presumably this went fairly smoothly for the launch. And if your experience was otherwise, please let us know. I want to do a quick clarification here, and that is the whole HBO Now versus real HBO. Right, for all intents and purposes, HBO Now is the exact same application as HBO Go, except that it's packaged for people who don't actually get HBO on their cable service. HBO Go is the application that's designed for people who have HBO on their cable service. And here's a little trick, and this has worked for me, but you have to be committed to this. So on Court Killers, I think they call this cancel cable chicken or something like that. I forget what it's called exactly, but I have actually called my cable provider and said, I am not going to continue my HBO service because it's too expensive now. So I'm just going to switch to HBO Now. And all of a sudden, there were all these limited time options available for me to otherwise reduce the cost of my cable service.
Now, isn't HBO Now the same price as getting HBO through your cable provider?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Well, but then your argument doesn't even make sense.
No, it does make sense because what it gives you is flexibility. HBO Now can be turned on and turned off on a month-by-month basis. And doing that with your cable provider is a huge pain in the backside.
Hmm. Okay. Certainly worth a shot, I guess. Cool.
And it depends how you consume your television, right? If you're more interested in watching these on mobile devices or on your set-top boxes that you have, then it may make sense to just go ahead and watch this through HBO Now, as opposed to paying for HBO and having it over cable service. Like, I do know that even though I flip through HBO channels, it's so rare that I actually stop and watch something live on HBO. I mean, why would I? If anything, the only thing that it does is it shows me, oh, this happens to be on HBO right now, and keeps me from having to go into the HBO Go app to find out what's on this month.
Mm. Okay. All right. Well, if any of that interests you and you're an Xbox owner, now you've got your options. Another app has also come, well, this is actually on the Windows side, and that is the Fox Sports Go app has been updated. They've had an app since the Windows 8.1 days, but I believe it was only on Windows PCs. They've now released a universal Windows 10 app, and that means that you can watch Fox Sports Go content on Windows 10 PCs and mobile devices. Fox Sports Go is, of course, it's similar to HBO, but this is for all of the Fox Sports properties. What you get is going to depend on where you live. It's going to also require that you have Fox Sports in your paid TV lineup, because when you go to use the app, it's going to make you log in with your cable provider credentials to get access. But you'll have access to Fox Sports 1, Fox Sports 2, whatever your regional Fox Sports channel is you should get. But that seemed a little murky. And then the other thing that I think is cool about this is, because this is a Windows 10 universal app, that should mean that it'll come to Xbox fairly soon, because it ought to just work. I mean, it's probably going to require a little bit of work, but there's going to be almost no reason for them not to release this on the Xbox One also. So that's cool to see also.
Yeah, I find the naming of this really strange. The FX and Fox apps on the various platforms are called FX Now and Fox Now. So suddenly for Fox Sports to call their app Fox Sports Go, after just talking about HBO and them having a Now and a Go app, it's making my head hurt.
Yeah, that's a little confusing, but very cool to see. So a few more options there for getting all of your digital content across all of your Windows devices. So that's it for our video stuff. Not really a lot going on in the audio space either. So let's move on to some gaming news.
What you mean that we're, like, we don't have a title app to talk about or anything?
Title, you're hilarious.
Well, there was a big title thing, right? Everybody's talking about title.
Oh, because of what?
Because of Beyonce.
Yeah, whatever. I think that's also, I think that's also the only place where you can listen to Prince's albums.
It is.
Because he owned his music, and that's the only place he put it. So, I guess
unless you go to YouTube and listen to it where everybody else is listening to it, because there's a lot of really good concert footage out on YouTube. I've been blown away by some of the clips that people have found over the last week.
Wow, that's cool.
And also, what another awful, horrible loss.
Absolutely. Yeah, that was shocking news when I saw it last week, and was pretty disappointed to see that news, because he was an amazing musician.
I saw him live once.
Really?
Yeah, it was phenomenal concert.
Yeah, that's got to be one of the best concerts you've been to. I'm just guessing.
Nobody was in their seats. Everybody stood through the whole thing, which actually annoyed the crap out of me, but it was a lot of fun.
Yeah, I bet. Okay, so I know you're just trying to stall to delay when we start.
I know.
Gaming
fine.
News.
Let's talk about games.
But we're not even going to initially start with games. The first is the passing of something else. It's the passing of the Xbox 360. Not nearly as detrimental to an industry as the loss of Prince, obviously. But still, the Xbox 360 no longer being produced. This is kind of amazing to me because it's a console that's still, it's still in use a lot. I mean, there's people that have lots of these there, and it seems like there's got to still be people buying them. So it's kind of amazing to me that it's going away. But you know, it's an 11-year-old console.
It's not really going away, right? It is not being produced anymore. But Microsoft has come out and said, we will continue to make the services available. We're still going to get Games with Gold. There's still going to be Xbox Live. It's just that they're not going to produce new boxes. I'm not saying that's not a big deal, because this shocked the heck out of me. I did not expect this at all.
Yeah. Yeah. No, you're absolutely right in that the usefulness of the console is not going away by any means, because like you said, all of those things are going to keep working if you have one. It's just kind of shocking to me that they're not making any more. So what you see on the store shelves is all that's left out there. And that, you know, by the holiday push at the end of the year, there probably won't be any left on the shelves.
Oh, I guarantee there won't be any by the holiday push. And let's remind people of something. This is, for all intents and purposes, the only still actively working Windows Media Center extender in existence.
Yeah. I mean, I guess the Seton Echo does still work, but not if you're on Windows 8.1.
Right. For Windows 7.
Right. Yep. Yeah, that's a really good thing to point out. And, you know, the rumors that I saw are that they're killing it now because they've got more hardware plans at E3 that could bring a cheaper Xbox One model into existence later this year. And if there's a cheap 360 and a cheap Xbox One, then it could cannibalize sales of the cheap Xbox One. So that's a theory that I could buy.
So let's explore that a little bit. I'm not entirely convinced that makes a whole lot of sense. They already have a $99 console. What is the point of a cheaper Xbox One console? If anything, I think what they need to do is create a more powerful Xbox One console. Why can't we still, and I don't even care because I don't play them, but why can't we still play 1080p games? We need a console that has more power, not one that is cheaper.
Well, but the problem is that one with more power means more money. And by and large, most people believe that the Xbox One essentially lost this generation because it costs more money than the PlayStation 4.
And it costs more money because it came with the interface device that was last time around the most popular accessory ever sold in the computer industry. So right. It's kind of fascinating to me that bundling that in with the app turns so many people away from it just because of that hurdle of the extra $100. So we had a $500 console instead of everybody else's $400 console. What if they came out with a $400 console, pushed the Xbox One as it currently exists down to, say, the $199-$249 level, and then had a $400 console that could more adequately compete with what everybody else is going to be doing in the next year or so?
I think that's possible. I think that actually both are possible. I think that the possibility of us getting a more powerful Xbox One at about the same current price, or maybe even a little bit more, like you suggested, plus what everyone likes to refer to as the Xbox Slim, which would basically be the same processing power and potential of the current box, but in a smaller form factor and cheaper, because it would be using basically the same hardware that's now 3 years old at this point.
Kind of like what they did with the 360.
Exactly, like they do with every console. So, you know, put that, like, it, yeah, if you could get that down to $200, that would be amazing. Now, the problem is, and we've talked about this a little bit in the past, is game developers and even some people like me are concerned about this idea of having a mid-generation hardware bump because, so now this Xbox that I spent $500 on only 3 years ago, two and a half right now, is no longer the most powerful Xbox. Like, what the crap? When I bought a 360, it was the most powerful Xbox for 7 years. And now you're going to say that my gaming console generations are half as long and cost more money up front? That's not cool. And from the game developer side, these guys are saying, I don't want to have to optimize my code for even more platforms now. Like, do they want to be able to do more things? Sure. But do they want to have to be able to optimize for even more platforms? Not really. There's a lot of game developers who have publicly commented that this idea of PlayStation and Microsoft releasing new consoles this year that are a lot more powerful, that they're just not happy about it.
Well, and on the Sony side, the vendors or the game builders have already said in several cases that if there's a least common denominator, then that's what we're shooting for, because we can't afford as a company to support an additional platform. And for all intents and purposes, it is an additional platform, even though it's still a PS4.
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, I'm very much looking forward to E3 this year to see what these guys announce and how they plan to make whatever it is that they have planned work out, because this is I think this could be the most interesting E3 that we've had in at least a couple of years, to see what exactly they're planning to do with both of those consoles.
And part of it's just because I think the industry is going in a direction that we didn't necessarily expect. There were hints about it, but I don't think anyone really believed that this was going to happen this soon. Hey, also, by the way, who expected that I would drag out the gaming section?
Boy, that's for sure. Yeah, we're only one topic in here, and it's all Richard's fault. That's okay. We didn't have feedback and not a lot and no audio news, so that's okay. So let's move on to Games with Gold. It's almost May. In fact, you may be listening to this in May, since this is coming out right at the end of the month. That means new free games on the Xbox One. You're still going to have Sunset Overdrive until the beginning of, until the 15th, because of the weird Xbox One schedule. For the whole month, you'll also be able to get Defense Grid 2, which is a tower defense game, kind of obvious sounding there. And then from May 16th to June 15th, Costume Quest 2. I've played the first Costume Quest. It's a fun little RPG, great to play through kids. That's why I got it. It seems like a weird time of year to release this game, because I assume that its story is pretty similar to the first one, which was these kids are out trick-or-treating and aliens invade their town. So that's why they're dressed up in costumes. So why is this the free game in May? I don't know. Cinco de Mayo Quest? I'm not sure. But so that's it on the Xbox One side. For the first half of the month on 360, you'll be able to get Grid 2. It's a racing game. I really like it. No surprise there. I believe I already own this game on something. And then in the second half of the month, you can get Peggle if you somehow don't already have that and are into that sort of game. You'll be able to get that for free on 360. And of course, another reminder, like usual, both of these 360 games will be backwards compatible on the Xbox One. If they aren't already, they will be by the time they hit Games with Gold in May.
So I don't know, Peggle, isn't by chance the Japanese character Peggle, is it?
I think it's one of your typical match 3 Candy Crush sort of
games,
I think. Right. I don't know.
I was a little too optimistic there. Now, the other thing that I want to remind folks of is that if you're listening to this at the end of the week, before we've turned into May, you still have a day or two to grab the games for April. So if you didn't already get Wolf Among Us on the Xbox One and on the Xbox 360, Saints Row 4, you should still do that quickly.
Right. That's a good thing to point out. Also, another update on the upcoming betas that are scheduled for release on the Xbox One. So we missed Doom and Battleborn. That was a couple weekends ago. This previous weekend was Mirror's Edge, a kind of an unusual beta in that it was a single player experience in an open world. We don't normally see that for betas. They're normally multiplayer demos. I did get a chance to check this out. I actually didn't play it. I watched a friend play, but it seemed pretty cool. He had a lot of good things to say about it. This game actually just got delayed, I believe, until June 7th, but I'm trying to pull that off the top of my head. Mirror's Edge looks good. If you liked the first one, I think you're going to like the next one. So keep an eye out for Mirror's Edge. And then there's one more big one coming soon. That is Overwatch. There's an early access that will start May 3rd and end on May 4th before it goes into open beta on May 5th through May 9th. Of course, Overwatch is the big hero shooter from Blizzard. This one looks really, really interesting, I think. So while I didn't get a chance to play Mirror's Edge, I will be trying to find some time to check out this Overwatch beta because that game will launch at the end of May. So very, very interesting looking shooter there. If you liked Team Fortress, that's kind of what Overwatch kind of looks like. If you've had a hard time keeping all of these different shooters straight, it's not Battleborn, even though everybody wants to compare Overwatch to Battleborn. Battleborn's a MOBA. Overwatch is not. So check that out if you're not into MOBAs, but want to check out a shooter.
All right. So that's it for gaming. But there's a bunch of mobile news, and you have updates on, I believe, information about mobile, information about Windows 10. What's going on?
Oh, lots of releases. It seems
is
like...
Is it good news?
Sure. I mean, new releases are... It's hard to say that new releases would be bad news, right? Because there's always bug fixes. So that's good news. Lots and lots of bug fixes. Yes, there have been releases on both Windows 10 PC and mobile. I believe in the last week there have been two separate releases on PC and one on mobile. I can barely even keep them straight anymore. I'm not going to clutter your mind with build numbers. It doesn't matter. Just go out and get the latest ones if you like living on the bleeding edge. And like some of the previous releases of late, they have a lot of features this time around, at least on the Windows 10 desktop side. So on the desktop, we see a lot of changes to the start screen and the start menu. They've finally made a change that we were asking for a really, really long time ago, and that is that the app section of the start menu now combines the section for recently used apps, most used apps, and all apps into one scrollable list. So where this really matters is on tablets and touchscreen devices where you just want to grab a hold of that list and start flicking to scroll down it. So now you finally can. So that's really good. They've also, if you're in tablet mode, this was a big change when Windows 10 came out. They've now brought back, only for tablet mode, a full screen all apps section. It's not exactly the same as Windows 8.1, but it's close enough that if you were really, really bothered by this, it's better. You know, Database Jace over at the Digital Lifestyle podcast and I have gone back and forth a lot about the tablet experience going from 8.1 to 10. Neither of us were very happy about it. This was one of the things that we didn't like. And we talked a little bit on Twitter about this. And I guess at this point, like, it's better, but I'd kind of just given up and resigned myself to what the start screen slash start menu is in Windows 10 that, okay, it's better. It's a little bit more 8.1-ish and that's cool, I guess. So I'll take it without grumping too much. They've also brought Cortana support on the lock screen, which is kind of cool. I haven't gotten a chance to play with this specific feature, but again, something that seems more useful in a tablet scenario. Maybe not so much in a desktop, unless you've got maybe I could see Cortana on the lock screen being useful. Maybe more in like a more public-y computer, like maybe a kitchen PC or just a more common access PC that you have in your house where lots of people are using it. Then I could see that support on the lock screen being really useful. A bunch of the really cool inking features that were shown off at Build are now available in this latest release. Again, something I haven't gotten a chance to play with. Life has just been too insane. But these all look really, really cool. And they're available now on Windows 10 Fast Ring. And then the last one, and perhaps the most cool, and this one actually involves the mobile side, we finally got the messaging stuff working on both platforms, where if you get a text message on your phone, you'll be able to see it and respond to it from your PC, and all of those messages are synced back and forth. Now, of course, the PC and the phone both have to be on the latest FastRing Insider builds to get this. So, you know, if you're thinking, oh, I really want this functionality at work, and your work PC is running, I don't know, a stable build of Windows, which it probably is, then you're probably going to miss out here, which is the case with me. There's also some other big bugs in these. The biggest one for me, and it's crazy to me that this is a specifically called out bug, but in the known issues for the last two mobile releases, it is specifically said apps like Tweetium fail to launch. Tweetium isn't just my favorite Windows phone app. It's my favorite mobile app ever. I'm not going without Tweetium. I'm sorry, that's not happening. I'm not upgrading to these FastRing builds until Windows fixes it on their side, or the Tweetium developer can somehow find a fix for whatever the heck is going on with this, because that ain't happening.
Interesting. You know, I want to touch on something that you were talking about with the all apps screen for tablets. I get the funny feeling, and I so want this to be true, but I get the funny feeling that this is the Windows team recognizing that they backpedaled too much with the start menu. And I had mentioned this when we saw Windows 10, and we saw how Windows 10 behaved on a tablet. And they got rid of so much of the tablety goodness on tablets for instead this desktop-like start menu. So I'm actually really happy to see this for all apps. I hope we start to see more tablet differentiation like this.
Yeah, that would be really nice to see them actually put a little more focus into the tablet experience. And it looks like they are. So maybe the Redstone anniversary update will make my Surface an even better tablet than it currently isn't really right now. So that was a confusing sentence.
Wow. That was not where I expected you to go with that.
Okay, so let's move on to really, really mobile news. And
to other things I'm not happy about.
Right. So this was reported over at Windows Central. They got a leaked email from Terry Myerson to the rest of the Windows team, supposedly, that shed some really interesting light on Windows 10 mobile. First off, they say that Microsoft is not very proud of the 950 and the 950 XL. And frankly, they probably shouldn't be, because they're really not that spectacular phones. I mean, we said that when they launched. They're not dramatically huge upgrades from the 930, the 1520, and the Icon that they replaced after almost 2 years of those phones being over 2 years in the case of the 1520. They just weren't massive upgrades. So I'm not really all that surprised there. Perhaps more interesting side of all of this, though, is that Windows Central is saying that basically this email said that there will be a Redstone 2 release. Now, remember, Redstone 1 is what they're more popularly calling the anniversary update, which will come out this summer, probably in July. There will be a Redstone 2 release along with a Surface phone by April of 2017, and potentially a Redstone 3 release. Now, before we dig into this whole Surface phone thing, this whole idea of a Redstone 2 and a Redstone 3, I absolutely believe that there would be a Redstone 2. We got Windows 10 launched in July, and then we got a big update in November. So that would kind of make sense. We get Redstone in July, we get Redstone 2 in November. And then if they're going to do a Redstone 3 that maybe corresponds with some hardware, then I could see that being the one that comes out around the time of a Surface phone. But if this mythical, at this point, Surface phone that everyone keeps talking about is actually going to happen, but it's not going to happen for another freaking year? Like, are you kidding me? It'll be a year and a half between the 950 that they're ashamed of until the Surface phone comes out? What is it that they expect Windows Phone fans to be doing in between that period?
If this is true, and there aren't any really good third-party devices between now and then, it's over. It is game over.
Well, and that's really where I'm going with this. So the other thing that the other couple of things that they said is that they are absolutely going to be focused on innovating in mobile phones. And they also said, we believe in this product's value to business customers. And as soon as I read that, I thought, isn't that like word for word what RIM said about BlackBerry in like 2010? And look where that got him.
It also seems like a desperate grab at the end, because remember that when this platform started, when this Windows Phone platform started, they had nothing for enterprise.
Right.
Now they're all in on enterprise, and it seems like it's their last best hope.
Right. A market that just doesn't seem to barely even exist anymore. Like, obviously, the enterprise is still a thing, but BYOD kind of ruined that strategy, didn't it? Like, everyone just brings their own phone now.
Yeah, it did and it didn't, because there's a lot of backlash on BYOD right now.
Okay. I haven't seen much of that, but I will take your word for that. I could definitely see that being the case. But so even if you do work for one of these big enterprises that isn't happy about BYOD, if the enterprise says, all right, we're sick of you bringing your iPhone in, here's a Windows phone with no apps. Like, no one's going to be happy about that. I mean, I get the idea. I get the promise that with Continuum especially, that these are devices that for a lot of business cases could be the only computing device that an enterprise, you know, corporate person needs. That's possible with these devices. I just don't, like, it's just too little too late at this point. It really seems like the end is very, very near here. And if they really wanted to make something out of Windows Mobile, it needed to be last year at the latest that they were making this big push, not delaying the big push of mobile stuff until late 2016 to hopefully come back in 2017 when the whole smartphone market is in decline. That's when they're going to come back. I don't see that as a winning strategy.
A year from now. A year!
Right. Pretty sure I'm going to be on Android by then.
This is so frustrating. And do you presume from this that Microsoft is finished releasing Lumia phones for the year? We're not going to see anymore?
It kind of sounds that way. I mean, if Windows Central didn't release the whole letter, which is kind of frustrating, The Verge released a chunk of the email, the part that talked about the value to business customers and stuff. But there had to have been much more to this email than what either of those two sites showed for Windows Central to have reported as much as they did. But in terms of new hardware, Windows Central only was talking next year. So yeah, that seems like way too little too late for me.
Yeah, a year from now is just insanity. I don't know what they're thinking. And I almost wonder if this isn't some corporate, I hate to use this word, ploy, to see if in fact, Windows Phone will just die out before they even get there, so they don't have to bother. I am not kidding.
Yeah, yeah. I would hope that they wouldn't take that approach, because that's a really crappy way of doing that. But it could be. It could be. I mean, it was less than a month ago at Build when Terry Myerson was saying, Windows Mobile just isn't our focus now, but it will be someday. Okay. Sure.
I really thought that meant software support. I assumed he was talking software, not hardware.
Well, they really have to go hand in hand. We have to get some new phones. We have to get some new really high-end phones, and we have to have better software to go on them. Software that isn't buggy. Software that is basically done when the phone releases, unlike what happened with the 950. Yeah. I could keep raging about this, but I don't think we're going to get any further. So we'll, as usual, have to wait and see what happens with this. But this certainly looks like a pretty bad sign for the future of Windows 10 mobile.
So we're going to start two kind of polls here. One's going to be an over-under on the day that Josh switches to Android. And the other is going to be the likelihood that I could actually alternatively convince Josh to switch to iOS.
Well, switching from Windows Mobile, I think, is going to happen soon-ish. Like, I think we're talking next couple of months, probably.
You're giving stuff away, you know? We have to.
But the likelihood of me going to iOS, that's pretty slim, dude. I mean, I was thinking about this today in preparation for the podcast, and this feels like a crappy presidential election where I'm going to leave Windows Mobile, the candidate of my choice, because it's just not going to win. And now I have to choose between two candidates that I hate. Which one do I hate the least?
Wow.
That's what
it's a good thing
here.
We don't have that real world scenario to worry
exactly.
about.
Exactly. Oh, 2016. Can I just wake up from this nightmare? So,
and title.
Yeah, apparently. So, let's move on to, we got any good news here to talk about? Let's not end on this bad note.
Well, yeah, I think there's there's some interesting industry news. You know, we talk about Amazon Video every once in a while because Amazon Video is one of the solutions that folks who have used the third-party add-in for Media Center can take advantage of. And of course, there's a very good Amazon Video app on the Xbox. Well, there's a whole new way to enjoy your Amazon Prime Video content. And previously, it required a subscription to Amazon Prime. It costs $100, 99 and some cents per year for everything. But if you want to, you totally have the option now to pay more for that. You could either pay $10.99 a month for everything that you're getting for $100 a year, or you could pay $8.99 a month, which is notably a dollar less than what Netflix is now charging after the grandfathered clause folks get updated to the new rate, and I'm in that group.
Me too.
So roughly $9 a month for video only. No shipping, just digital stuff. So if you're into that, you could pay still more than $100 a year
right.
for your content. Now, I'm making fun of this, and I'm doing that intentionally, but the reality is that there are people that this appeals to, right? I mean, when I was in college, I couldn't fathom spending $100 on something, but could I muster up $8.99 each month if I wanted content? Well, sure. I mean, heck, I mustered up three or four times that every week for pizza and beer. So yeah, I could make that happen. So there's definitely an audience or a market for this, but it's an interesting move. And what it really means is that Amazon is thinking about options for their consumers and truly thinking of their video offerings as a product in and of itself.
Yeah. The people that this makes the most sense for are the people who just want to binge on some of the Amazon exclusives, you know, like maybe you want to watch Man in the High Castle or High Tower, whatever the heck that show is called that I still haven't watched.
Man in the High Castle.
Okay. Thank you. Or, my mind is completely blanking. It is 10:30, folks. My brain is not at top pace, but there's some critically acclaimed Amazon exclusive shows and movies and stuff that are on Amazon Prime. So, and you could very easily watch all of them in 1 month for $9 and not have to pay the $100.
Transparent. Mozart in the Jungle. There's some really good shows that are definitely worth checking out.
I almost called Transparent Invisible, and then I stopped myself.
That's that is like perfectly insulting.
I didn't mean it to be insulting, but I just couldn't think of the word. So yeah, so Amazon Prime, you covered this well. $9 a month if you just want video for 1 month, or $11 for everything, or like use this to binge, or use this as your trial, and then do the math and realize $100 a year for everything makes way more sense. Just do this. Here's my question to you, Richard. What are the chances of Netflix giving us a discounted rate for a full year of Netflix?
I hadn't even thought about that, but that is brilliant.
Wouldn't that be awesome?
That would be awesome. I love that idea. And, you know, I say that I'm paying $9.99 a month now, but it's worse than that because I'm actually paying not only for streaming, but also for disc service, because there's still content from Netflix that I'm interested in that is only available on DVD. I don't know if people remember this or not, but everyone complains, oh, this content isn't available from Netflix anymore. Yes, it is, but you have to get it on physical media. Stop whining. You probably have a drive somewhere.
Physical media is for old people.
Okay, well, I'm in that list.
All right. So, Richard, what sort of physical media are you watching in your entertainment center?
Actually, not a whole lot of physical media. So, ironically, yeah. So, I do have some digital content on physical media, and that is my Drobo. And my Drobo is, it's a week later now, still in data protection mode.
Oh my gosh.
That means it is still cleaning up and recovering from the crash.
Have they given you any idea as to how long you should wait for this?
Yeah, so I've been reaching out to them every once in a while and said, all right, so another week went by, and should I be worried? And the response is always, send us the new diagnostic file and just keep us abreast on what's going on.
All right.
And you know what? When I had to pay $50 and talked about the convoluted process that I went through to get support for this issue that I had with my out-of-warranty Drobo, I have to say, I didn't expect that A, it was going to take this long, and B, they were going to be this, responsive is the wrong word, this diligent. Like, it's a month and a half later, and they are still on it with me. So I'm getting my money's worth. I just hope that my drive ultimately figures itself out, and I can use it again and go forward. Because now, Drobo has apps, and you can get to it remotely, and I'm going to be really bummed if all of a sudden this thing is dead.
Yeah, so does the next hard drive die before or after you've finished recovering from this one?
That's actually disastrous. If that happens, then it's done. And so here's one of the things that I've been kind of trying to figure out. They recommended that I start moving content off so that I have a backup of the content that's on my Drobo. My problem is, where else would I have 10 terabytes of storage available?
Right. This is why you have a Drobo.
Right.
Gosh.
Okay. Anyway, so as for watching some content, I haven't really watched a lot because I have been traveling and I've been very busy, and I had a show to get out, which I finally got out, and we'll talk about that in a little bit. But I did complete Boston Legal, and I'm so glad that I went back to that. But I will say that the finale just didn't live up to as good as everything else in the last two seasons that I watched have been. But what a great show. And if anybody is looking for just some really good, fun, entertaining content, legal content in the style of David E. Kelly, this is him at his best, I think. Well, I don't know. Ally McBeal is pretty awesome, except for a couple bad seasons. But this is great. All right. Better Call Saul season 2 ended. I watched it through the end. And It certainly did not go where I thought it would go. It was really good. I will continue watching this. I love the show. What I love about the show is that you're watching it tell the story of the characters that you already know, and you're just you're kind of you want more. You just want more and more, and you're like, but how do they get from where they are now to where they end up being from how I know them in the other show? So this is, I love this. So the first season was a little slow. This season was great. I highly recommend it if you're interested in this and if you were a Breaking Bad fan. And then finally, we finally resumed watching some winter episodes that we'd recorded and hadn't watched for a long time. And it's really weird to be watching television and seeing Christmas commercials. But anyway, Sleepy Hollow, Nashville, and Doctor Who, all stuff that has either kind of restarted a while ago or had started in the winter and we just didn't get a chance to see it through. So we've been back to that for the last couple of weeks. And that's about it. I'm behind on everything else.
You know, you reminded me, we've had the last five-ish episodes or whatever of Heroes Reborn on our media center waiting for us to just bite the nail,
like out.
Suffer through it. We were going to do it.
No, who cares?
And then the other day I noticed we now only have two episodes of Heroes Reborn on the media center. I think some other stuff had built up and I got low on disk space.
Yep,
and
running out of room, it got pushed off. Yep. It's not important anymore.
And the media center said, well, there's no way he's going to watch this crap, and chose to delete Heroes Reborn. So we're probably just not going to do that, even though I said that we would. So sorry. So what have I been watching that wasn't Heroes Reborn? I went back to Homeland. Man, is that a good show. I'm most of the way through season two now.
It is so good.
I think they're on, what, five or six now? Yeah, it is such a good show. I mean, there are always a couple of moments here and there where you're like, really, really? No, a CIA agent wouldn't do this. This isn't that realistic. But for the most part, it is. And it's good. And I really like that show a lot.
I forget. Season two is basically her getting closer to him, isn't it?
Sort of. Sure.
Okay. All right. It's been a while.
It's kind of season one also. So, I mean, season one has the cabin and all that. So, I don't know. It's also hockey's second season. The NHL playoffs are going on. So, watching most of the Penguins games when I can. And they've moved on to the second round. So, that will continue for me. And it's also racing season. So, while I'm not as devoted to racing series as I once was, I've been trying to watch when I can. So I've watched a little bit of the most recent IndyCar race and the United Sports Car Series, and of course Formula One. Also, not much on the gaming front because I've also been really, really busy. But I completed all the story missions in The Division. I'm now level 30 also, so it's trying to figure out exactly how I want to deal with the Division end game. So you'll probably hear more from me about that in the future. That's it for me.
All right, cool. Well, one quick announcement before we're out of here, and that is that I plan on being at IoT World the second week of May, and I'm also going to be speaking at the Future Kitchen event at Williams-Sonoma's Test Kitchen in San Francisco. That's at Williams-Sonoma headquarters. I expect to be interviewing Doug Evans, the CEO and founder of Juicero, a relatively controversial connected appliance for the kitchen. So if you happen to be in the area and you're interested in that, tickets are available, and we'll have a link in the show notes to Future Kitchen. And if by any chance you're going to IoT World, please let me know. I would love to connect up with you.
Ooh, controversial kitchen appliances. This sounds awesome.
Well, because it's one of those things where you just have to ask, and I will, why does this need to be connected?
Because, Richard, everything needs to be connected. That's a dumb question. Next question. No, I'm kidding. All right, so that's it for the show. But if you want to get a hold of us and, I don't know, send us some feedback for next week, you can do that in a few different ways. We're on Twitter. Richard is at Richard Gunther. I'm at Josh Pollard. And the website is at Digi Media Zone, DIGI Media Zone. We're on Facebook at facebook.com/thedmz. We're on Google Plus, and by we, I mean Richard and the site, not so much me. We've also got an email address that you could send some email to, entertainment20@thedigitalmediazone.com. Richard, you're going to IoT World because you kind of like this IoT stuff so much that you've got another podcast called Home On, where you're plugging this stuff all the time. What's going on with the latest Home On?
I'm kind of obsessed by this stuff. So I mentioned last week that I had Tom Coates, the co-founder of Thington and a general voice in the IoT space. And he joined me for what I thought was a really fun episode. But as I had mentioned, it took a long time to get out because it took a long time to edit because we talked for a long time. And I like to keep that show under an hour. And I made it by seconds. I think it was like 59:42 or something like that. It was crazy. So I hope people get a chance to listen to that. I think it's a very interesting product, and he is a brilliant guy, and we had a lot of fun talking. Now, the show coming up is with Josh Bradshaw, and he is the head of product for Muzzly. Muzzly is a similar kind of product. They take a very different approach toward it, but it's essentially a services aggregation app. So we'll be talking about some of the same stuff, and we'll also be talking about some of the news that has been going on in this space. So give us a listen if you're interested.
All right. Very cool. And if you are interested in any of these shows, you should subscribe to them. That's the best way you're going to get them. You can find them anywhere podcasts are: iTunes, Pocket Cast, Stitcher Radio, TuneIn Radio, and even Google Play, amazingly, which we're going to have to get some links up for those. That would be good for us to do. And if you like the shows and you're a subscriber and you want to help us out, there's a really easy way that you can do that. Head on over to iTunes, give us a rating, or if you really, really want to help us, give us a review too. It helps us out a lot, and we really, really appreciate it if you can do that. Then, if you want to connect with us in real time, do that when we're recording this show live. It's normally Tuesday nights around 8:30 p.m. Sometimes it's Wednesday nights. Sometimes we don't even know what time it's going to be like tonight. But your best bet, follow us on Twitter. We'll always tweet when the live show is going to be, and you can jump in the chat, listen to us talking, and interact with us and impact the show while it's being recorded. That's going to do it for episode 366. I'm Josh Pollard. He's Richard Gunther, and we'll be back next time for episode 367. Until then, adios.
Goodbye.